Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's go around the NFL to keep you in the loop. Brought to you by Texas First Bank on Sports Radio 610.
Dude, the Tennessee Titans are wearing Oilers uniforms this Sunday. I don't even want to bury the lead. The Tennessee Titans Twitter account right now is Tennessee Titans / Oilers. They just put out a video. It says, "Love you, Blue." They're going to be in Oilers uniforms this Sunday when they take on the Indianapolis Colts.
Well,
and
it's
they are
love
pushing the hell out of it. They're celebrating it. The hell is going on here?
They have no right. Dead serious, to put the Oilers Derek as their avatar, which is what they changed it to. And to be fair to what they're doing, it's Love Ya Blue Day. Love Ya Blue had nothing to do with Tennessee.
Oh my gosh. They just tweeted out a video of Bum Phillips. Everyone loves Bum Phillips. The quotes, the fashion, the coach. They're showing Love Ya Blue Oiler highlights right now.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at Billy White Shoes. I'm looking at Earl Campbell. I'm looking at Bum Phillips yelling at him. There's a 4-minute highlight video, and their whole freaking Twitter is Tennessee Titans / Oilers. You kidding me?
Yeah.
What kind of crap is this? It's gotten to the point where Mike Vrabel, when he made his speech after the game, here's how he started it. Here's how Mike Vrabel starts his speech. You want to talk about the Oilers living on in Tennessee? This is Mike Vrabel starting his speech.
Fellas, we talked about kicking down the door. We just got to keep kicking.
Where'd you get that from? Now listen to Bum Phillips. We know where that came from. It's to the point where now Mike Vrabel's even using that as their line. Here's Bum Phillips. We all know. We all know about this.
1 year ago, we knocked on the door. This year, we beat on the door. Next year, we're going to kick the son of a in.
Dude, their Twitter name, their name is Oilers right now.
Yeah, I actually thought, like, I couldn't find their actual official account because I saw the Tennessee Titans / Oilers on their account, and I'm like, is this a fan account or what's going on here? They have no right. I'm not trying to be dramatic. I'm just saying they have no right. It's blasphemous. They have no history with Love Ya Blue. They can say, well, the Oilers were the organization before we brought it to.
Why don't the Baltimore Ravens bring Jim Brown out?
Right.
Why don't they do that? Because the Baltimore Ravens are basically the Browns. Why don't they honor Bernie Kosar?
But what I'm saying
is why I wish the Texans would have come back the Oilers, so we wouldn't have crap like this, and there would be like some sort of pride and some sort of like resemblance.
But if they want to be, I agree. But if they want to be like, well, actually, guy of NFL organizations, well, actually, you know, we were the Oilers, we brought the organization. Okay, you can do that. But Love Ya Blue had,
dude, they're showing Bum right now on the horse.
Love Ya Blue died in 1982.
Dude.
I mean, that's what...
It just showed Robert Brazil.
Robert Brazil maybe... Well, he's from the South. But some of these former Oilers that they're showing maybe never even stepped foot in Tennessee. You know?
That
like,
is crazy, man.
It's off. Love Ya Blue? I mean, you got to draw the line somewhere.
I'm watching
somewhere.
This video. This is like a hype video.
Right.
the hell is going on right now?
I mean,
and you know what makes me sick? John McClain's going to justify it just because he's friends with Amy Adams Strunk. He's going to join us tomorrow at 10:40. We've asked him about this. He's going to say exactly what you're saying right now. I'm going to sit back. I'm going to eat my popcorn. Figgy, fire me up some. I might want to have a little nibble before tomorrow. And y'all, I'm going to let you two go at it. You better defend the honor.
I will. I mean,
this is a joke.
You can say, well, this and that.
This means nothing to the people
and
there.
And you're accurate.
This means nothing to the people there.
You should not have a Love Ya Blue oil derrick, an Oilers derrick as your avatar right now, which they switched to that, or have a Love Ya Blue day. I'm going to go there. I'm old enough to know a lot of those Love Ya Blue Oilers. I wrote a book about one. They don't want it. I'm telling you, they don't want to be a part of the Tennessee Titans other than, sure, if you invite them and pay their way to go wave at the crowd, you know, on a whatever throwback day, yeah, they'll do it because that's the organization that in which they played. But
no fans don't care about
they
that.
They don't consider that.
Not
too,
like here.
That too, Figgy. First of all, the Oilers players don't consider themselves Titans. And Tennessee Titans fans could give two flips about the Oilers.
The only Titan fans that would care is the original Oilers fans that went over
yes,
to Tennessee.
Yes.
All right.
That's
well,
it.
It's happening. You're going to see Oiler uniforms. They are going to be alive and well and embraced on Sunday. And it is
I think it's
going to
be polite applause.
But it is going to be an extreme effort. They're pushing the hell out of it.
Let me ask you this real quick. I think it's going to be polite applause, kind of a tip of the cap from Tennessee Titans fans to kind of the roots of the organization. You have that same day in Houston, and what happens? If you had the exact same day, Love Ya Blue Day,
oh my God,
in Houston, how would it compare to Love Ya Blue Day in Tennessee?
I mean, come on, what do you think?
Yeah, exactly.
There's still people that wear Oiler jerseys to Texans
games. I saw a couple at the game.
I saw more Oiler jerseys than I did active Texans last game. I just went to TennesseeTitans.com/shop because I figured this was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
At the very top, there's a big banner and it says Shop Oilers. You click on it. You click on it. There's a nice Oilers tee. There's a nice Oilers hoodie. There's an old school badass Oilers 47 brand crew neck. There's Oilers hats. There's an Oilers helmet. There's an Oilers beanie. They are absolutely good. There's Oilers socks, Oilers cups, Oilers shot glasses, an Earl Campbell plaque on the Tennessee Titans website. That's where we're at right now. Screw the Adams family. And I'm not talking about the TV show with that big-ass guy and that creepy mom and that creepy-looking furry thing. I'm talking about the real Adams family.
Oh, how about this well-actually
Amy
guy?
Amy Adams Strunk.
How about this well-actually guy on the text board? So do you get mad when the Lakers wear their old Minnesota jerseys? They were the Lakers in Minnesota.
Hey, well-actually guy here.
And they became the Lakers in L.A. They were not the Titans in Houston. And that was absolutely, it's absolutely blasphemous.
RG3 says he's open to a return. He knows David Culley. Tyrod Taylor's out. Yay or nay on RG3?
Yeah, nay. Although, yeah. He said he's been working out and wouldn't mind playing for Washington.
Just focus on broadcasting, Robert. Yeah. I love you, man. Shout out to Copper's Cove High School. Just focus on that. Andre Johnson, he is eligible for the NFL Hall of Fame his first year. This year, Devin Hester also eligible, as is Steve Smith, among other guys. Nick Mangold, Jake Long, Vince Wilfork, DeMarcus Ware, Antonio Cromartie, all eligible. John McClain's going to have the task of selling Andre Johnson. So we'll see. There's no Texans in the NFL Hall of Fame. Andre would be the first. John McClain's going to be the one in charge of making his sales pitch. So we'll see how that goes. Please don't ask him about it tomorrow, though.
No, we're going to ask Oilers.
Because every time you ask John about this, he just lists his resume.
We're going to preview the game.
I don't know what he had to do.
Two-time first.
Let me ask you this, though, right now.
Two-time second team All-Pro. Seven-time Pro Bowler. Won a national championship at the University of Miami. The number three pick in the 2003 NFL draft. Two times the NFL receptions leader.
Hang on, before we talk about the Texans,
NFL
I've been sitting here thinking
yards
about
leader,
something.
And Gary Kubiak speaks the world of him.
Who gets in first?
Now, I talked to Gary Kubiak one time, and Gary Kubiak told me that of all the players that he has coached, that Andre Johnson,
and you're remembering this exactly how he says it,
was by far his favorite ever. He's coached some great play coach, John Elway, and Gary Kubiak told me that Andre Johnson is his favorite that he has ever coached.
You know what's going to be tough?
You know what's crazy about Andre? Of all the players that were on that team with Kubiak, he was the one guy that no matter whether they lost, no matter whether they won, he would go up to the podium and he would answer every single one of your questions. And even after the media session, if you still had a question for him, Andre would give you all the time in the world to answer your questions after they lost.
It's scary how perfectly you remember everything he says about
that. And let me tell you something else about Andre. The community, the city of Houston, you've had a lot of athletes that have come here and they didn't quite embrace the community. No Houston Texan, except maybe Brian Cushing. And maybe T.J. Yates.
T.J. Yates.
And maybe John Weeks.
Well, now you're a little off.
Has embraced the community like Andre.
Question. Who gets into the Hall of Fame first, Steve Smith or Andre Johnson? They're both eligible this year.
Is there like somewhat of like a...
I think...
What's the word I'm looking for? I don't know...
Personality
is there
matters.
Like a, is, yeah, personality, national. But is there also like kind of a novelty given the fact that Steve Smith's so small and he's like looked at as one of those small receivers? Like, don't you think like, I think they both
it's his
get
personality.
In, but he's also the young guy and he's kind of like, he's kind of, yeah. I feel like they look favorably at him too.
I don't want this to happen, but I think Steve Smith has the edge. How about you?
Did I ever tell you about the time?
He was a jerk, Steve Smith.
I asked Steve Smith a question after a game, and he cussed me out.
Yeah.
Andre would never do that.
Andre wouldn't do that. Steve Smith, 13 years. Andre Johnson, 12 years. Steve Smith, 14, 185 yards. Steve Smith, 14, 786 yards. Andre Johnson, 14, 185. Steve Smith, 81 touchdowns. Andre Johnson, 70. Steve Smith, 5-time Pro Bowler. Andre Johnson, 7-time Pro Bowler. It's about a wash in every category.
Dre was better, though.
Dre was better, but I'll bet you Steve Smith gets in first.
I'm going to go with Dre, but it's interesting. I respect both of their work. I think DeMarcus Ware is probably going to be one of the first ballot guys this year, but it's interesting. John McClain's got his work cut out for him. Joins us tomorrow, 10:40. On a game day. Let's take a trip to Carolina. Let's figure out about this Carolina team. The defense, the quarterback, everything that comes with it. Heck, second-year coach Matt Rhule from Baylor to Carolina. He has things going right now. His team's looking 3-0 in the eyes. Nick Wilson, who covers the team out there, joins the show next.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
All right, let's go to Carolina. Nick Wilson, a co-host of Wilson and Norfleet out there at WFNZ 610 AM and 102.5 FM, covers the Panthers, joins the show now. Nick, I'm not even going to beat around the bush. 3-0, it's a foregone conclusion, right? Carolina Panthers 3-0 at about this time, tomorrow at about 10 p.m.
It's funny you say that because you know what our topic today was? is this Texans game a trap game? So it seems like we're on the same path.
I guess, but clearly there are some advantages that Carolina has, and that defense, let's start right there. From my perspective, is that a real thing or not?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, we've had some defenses that have kind of been fool's gold the past couple years, where they've been really good at getting after the quarterback, but maybe they're kind of so-so in coverage and they're crap in the run game. This, what has surprised me is they're phenomenal at getting after the opposing quarterback because of their versatility and their speed, but their ability to stop the run, they limited Alvin Kamara to 5 yards on the ground on 8 carries last week. They made the Saints tap out on the ground. You add to it some really good young corners. I don't think this Panthers defense is fool's gold at all. I think this is the real deal. This is the best defense I've seen since probably 2015 here.
Talking to Nick Wilson, covers the Panthers out there, WFNZ, 610 AM and 102.5 FM. What about Sam Darnold? That was obviously a popular talking point, the quarterback position heading into the season. We wondered if maybe Justin Fields would be a possibility, how even throughout the Deshaun Watson thing before the off-field stuff came into play. How has Sam Darnold looked 2 games in?
Sam Darnold's looked really, really good. If he keeps this up, I'm going to have to eat a Bojangles size or a Chick-fil-A size, a 30-piece of Bojangles.
Now you're making me miss Bojangles.
Man, let me tell you, I've been on a diet for 9 months. I miss Bojangles, and I drive past it every day. But he's on the way to making me eat some crow. I was not happy with the acquisition. I was not happy that it was Sam Darnold or bust. But what I really like is week one, against the Jets, they kind of had the training wheels on him. This last week, the Saints did a really good job in the second half of forcing second and longs, third and longs. And what really surprised me is he had about 5 throws on second and long or third and long that if they don't get this, the game is – they don't score points in the second half, and this game is a lot closer going late into the fourth quarter. His arm is why they were able to put this game away really late in the third quarter, and I didn't expect to say that specifically in a game against a defense that has made other Panthers quarterbacks look pretty stupid the past couple years.
How real was the Panthers' interest, do you feel, from what you know, in Deshaun Watson, and how real might it be now?
It was very, very real. Dave Tepper went angling for some big fish. He took a swing. They took a real swing at Matt Stafford, and Matt Stafford didn't want to come here. They were in on every quarterback deal you could possibly think that they could be in on. I think if the off the field stuff never pops up, it would not have surprised me if Deshaun Watson, because of the hunger of Dave Tepper for a superstar, I think there's a good chance he would have been a Carolina Panther. I think now it becomes, when does Deshaun truly become available? Like, when does that become a real possibility, both with the off-the-field concerns and the Texans asking price, versus does Sam Darnold start to regress at any point? If Sam Darnold continues to play the way he's playing, Deshaun never becomes a topic again. But if Sam starts to struggle, and maybe all of a sudden some of those skies start to clear up over Deshaun Watson, that's a very sunny forecast, because Dave Tepper is known for taking big risks, big swings, and not caring if he fails. Deshaun Watson is the biggest swing you could possibly take right now in the NFL.
Y'all have an interesting situation out there as well, if Deshaun Watson was acquired, because it's one thing to go to New York, it's another thing to go to Miami, but he's almost a god out there. Like, in that region, it seems like he's almost a god. How much support does Deshaun have out there still with fans?
So I think the only complicating factor is the off-the-field stuff. But if that got cleared up, listen, let's not get around this. Carolina's been around for 25 years as an NFL team. They've had one guy that has consistently filled the park, and that's Cam Newton. Everybody else, they've had good teams, which have had years where they draw well, but there just haven't been a lot of tourist, you know, things that are going to bring the wine and cheese fans out every single Sunday. Deshaun Watson is one of the few caliber of names that if you brought him here, you could guarantee a full stadium every single week. But again, that's all predicated on there will be some fans, if the stuff off the field isn't cleared up enough, that they wouldn't go. So if there's reasonable clearance there, oh yeah. He would be the biggest thing since Cam Newton and the only thing comparable to Cam Newton in terms of a business attraction for the Panthers.
I've been kind of obsessed with this Panthers defense because I've been very impressed with it as well, particularly the ends. But there's still a guy named Christian McCaffrey, you know, on the offense, and there's still some other weapons there. How are they doing it that way? That has to be a huge compliment and security blanket for Sam Darnold.
Yeah, the only real thing that you could say about this team and how they're built that might not be set up for Sam to succeed is the offensive line. And through two games, they have negated what is – I mean, Landry will tell you some stories about Cam Irving from his time in Cleveland. There are some stories to be told there about the level of slap-assery of that guy. So the offensive line is problematic, but what they've done is – they've really featured a lot of Christian McCaffrey. He's been able to stay healthy. He's got some punch to him. And more importantly, Sam's getting the ball out quickly. And Sam's developing. So one of the real problems with the Panthers' offense previously is McCaffrey was the only cutoff valve because Greg Olsen was never healthy or your young receivers weren't consistent enough. Let me tell you, Dan Arnold, that's a big boy. He's about 6'5", a really nice young tight end. He's become a cutoff valve. Robbie Anderson's become a cutoff valve. So what that does for McCaffrey is it makes him even more dangerous because the offense isn't as predictable. So somehow they've managed to get 61 touches on the body of Christian McCaffrey, but yet the offense isn't predictable. I think that's a pretty good emphasis on the talent and the usage of some of the talent they have here.
Do you think they load managed McCaffrey last year? It seemed like he was close to coming back, and then they kept holding him out. Did they basically just put him on ice until this year? Is that something they did? Because I think it would be a smart strategy if they did.
Listen, I'm not doubting that Christian's groin might have been a problem considering that he's dating a supermodel, an Instagram model. But do I think it was worth holding him out the final four games of last year? No. I think that was, we're not going to risk the $80 million asset we just put serious money into when he's coming off a year where he had 400 and some touches, and this was clearly a lost cause. Matt Rhule was the guy who, anytime somebody would bring up, tanking, would pound the gavel, and no, we don't believe in that here. You cannot convince me that Christian McCaffrey, with a slight a phantom groin tweak mid-practice or mid-date, I don't know which happened, that was worthy of the final four games, five games of last year.
Nick, appreciate you. Looking forward to it. If you're asking me, I know what y'all's topic is. You told us. Not a trap game tomorrow.
Yeah.
not a trap game tomorrow. I think you're going to be good.
I'm still just afraid of my own shadow here. I'm not used to having nice things. This could be a big part of it.
All right, Nick, we appreciate you, my friend.
Thanks, gents.
All right, there we go. Nick Wilson. You can hear him on Wilson and Norfleet, WFNZ, 610 AM, 102.5.
They're legit, man. FM. That defense is legit.
We might be talking about this halfway through the season as one of the better defenses in the NFL. And Hassan Reddick, big part of things. 12.5 sacks last year, already three up to this point. Points. Coming up, Davis Mills making his first start tomorrow. We'll hear from his head coach at Stanford. We'll hear from him after he made his first start at Stanford. And we'll hear a comparison from John Lopez. You'll just have to hear to believe next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Sell me on Davis Mills. You can't do it, John.
Oh, sure I can.
Sell me on Davis Mills.
Davis Mills, NFL arm, savvy, smart, probably a little faster than he looks. Under a pro-style offense in college, under a coach with NFL pedigree, coached by Pep Hamilton early in his career, he has now. Yeah, sure, you can sell me on. I can sell you on him.
He can spin it.
I can spin it. He can spin it.
That's your sales pitch, Figgy.
Yep.
You can spin it.
That boy can spin it.
I'm going to bring on David Shaw, coach at Stanford, who coached Davis Mills. 11 starts, 14 total games. He makes his debut tomorrow for the Houston Texans, his starting debut at least on national TV. Here is David Shaw talking about Davis Mills, starting with the simple question I just asked J-Lo. I think he failed. Figgy, you failed even more.
I did not fail.
Sell me on Davis Mills, Mr. Shaw, please.
I could take up your entire show talking about Davis, so I'll try to keep it short.
Okay.
There's a reason why this guy was the number one quarterback coming out of high school. In high school, we saw his athleticism, his accuracy. What you're getting is a tough, smart, accurate, athletic guy that has command. When you see him play, there's play that you think a quarterback should be able to make on your level, he'll make it. I know it's a broad statement. It sounds like a college coach overstatement. Here's the bottom line. I spent 9 years in the NFL, and the quarterback coaches and coordinators and scouts that get it right, they don't look at all the bubble screens. They don't count all those things that happen in college football. You cut out the third down production. You cut out the red zone throws where the windows are really tight. You cut out the times they have to throw the ball with guys in their face, because you have to do that in the NFL because there's always going to be somebody in your face. I made a film of all situations over the last 2 years, and I would put that film up against any quarterback in this draft. His arm strength with throwing the ball under pressure, outstanding.
We're speaking with Stanford coach David Shaw, Coach Davis Mills at Stanford. Now, you just talked about your head college football coach cap. Put your NFL analyst cap on, which I know you've done a lot of. What led to not dropping, but his being taken in the third round, and what are your answers to that?
It's kind of what you said before, that a lot of people are anxious about the number of starts. I honestly believe it's inconsistent. He had 11 starts, but for quarterbacks more than any other position, it's still like ice cream. If I like mint chocolate chip and you don't, like, I can't talk you into it. You like cookie dough. Like, that's yours. So when people are looking at quarterbacks, coaches especially, not just scouts, but coaches especially, because you're looking for somebody that fits your offense, there's sometimes you're gravitated towards one guy as opposed to another one. Kyle Trask is not quite the athlete that Davis Mills or Kellen Mond is, but he's a pocket flamethrower. So you can see Tampa Bay saying, you know what, we don't want it. And I know the head coach there, what he likes in quarterbacks, he doesn't want a guy that's leading the pocket. He wants a guy going through his progressions and throwing the ball down the field. He's a down-the-field passer. So quarterbacks are still like whichever flavor that you like. But I do think, and I truly believe this, most people wanted Davis Mills to come back, because if he did come back, he's probably going to be one of the top two quarterbacks in America and a potential top 15 pick. So this year's third round pick, if he plays up to his ability, which we all believe he will be like getting next year's top 15 quarterback.
What were the pros and cons of him deciding to leave school? And do you feel like this could hurt him because he did not get that in-game on-field experience out there?
I'll be very open with you, very honest with you. It was a tough decision. And a lot of people in other places, other states don't understand. California has been really, really slow to progress beyond COVID restrictions. So here's Davis Mills making this decision after really playing the game of his life again in UCLA, played a great game, really had a great season, 70% completion just about. I take out, you know, the first half of the Colorado game because he had to sit on his couch for a week and a half because of a false COVID a situation. But when you watch from the second half of the Colorado game through the rest of the year, there's the best quarterback in the conference. I thought he played great. So he's coming off of that. But we also spent the last 3 weeks of the season on the road because we couldn't play football in our county. Mm. So in the middle of this decision, he's like, okay, coach, are we going to have a spring ball? I said, I don't know. So he's like, if I came back to come back for this really vital season, I might not have spring football. I might not be able to train in the summer with my team. He said, so if I did come back, like, I still might be hampered in my preparation for this all important season. Whereas he and I both know this guy's going to be a Stanford graduate. Right? He's not young. He's not coming out as a junior. This guy's coming out as a senior. And he's healthy and he feels great. And if Deshaun Watson isn't there for whatever reason, I'm not sure he is going to be sitting on the sidelines. So, you know, he might be the starting quarterback for the Houston Texans as opposed to being a college starting quarterback. So in that way, it would have worked out. But do I think he's ready? Do I think he's capable? The answer to both of those is yes.
when you're looking at him, you know, a lot of people say, including myself, what's the one thing that translates immediately with Davis Mills?
Well, it's two things that are tied together. This is my colorful way of talking about playing quarterback in the NFL. Playing quarterback in the NFL is throwing the ball through a window, but by the time you see the window's already closing, and you're getting chased by wild dogs. So the sooner that you can make a decision, so your anticipation and the more accurate your pass is, the better. And that's one thing he's very, very good at. He gets the ball out of his hands, he throws the ball accurately, and then he can also escape. And I know he can do it.
It's David Shaw, coach of Davis Mills, selling us on. I think he did a little bit better job than you and Figgy. I will say, I think the analysis had substance, but it is a former coach selling a former player. I've had this discussion, and we've had this on the Facebook page, 610 Loopholes. If you want to join, just search it. Admin should let you in, assuming you're not a pure psycho on Facebook, because we try to avoid that.
No, you're narrowing it down. That's a thin list.
But like, how much does it matter? And we've had this discussion, but how much does it matter that, hypothetically speaking, he would have been a top 15 pick next year had he gone back to Stanford? In other words, how valuable is that experience? Because I think when you say that, the optimist will say, okay, you're getting a guy that has this much talent and you're getting him in the third round and you look at him as more of a project, which can be true. But also, you also got to take into account, without that experience, without Baker Mayfield's last year at OU, without Kyler Murray's last year at OU, without Joe Burrow's last year at LSU, if those guys had gone to the NFL a year earlier, would they have ended up being as good in the NFL as they had been? And even if they would have, wouldn't it have taken more time for it to be appropriate for them to be on the field earlier or later on in their career? I just don't know. I don't think that really matters. And if it does, I think that's even more reason that starting week three is not ideal for a guy like Davis Mills.
I think the best example you just mentioned is Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow was good. He was really good as a junior. Then when he got to his last year, he became Joe Burrow. He became next level type quarterback. Obviously, they won the national championship. That's huge, the development. And then the other thing that matters a lot is for whom you're playing. Because Joe Burrow was playing with a you know, masterful offensive mind in, what's his name, Brady?
Joe Brady. We'll see tomorrow.
At LSU. So that matters a lot. Now, I think, obviously, Davis Mills, you know, playing for David Shaw would have been a huge, huge year had he played his last year, but he didn't. So you're skipping that whole, it's like going to 2 years of law school, you know? Yeah, you're missing a pretty important year, that third year, you know, when things become practical. So, yeah, I think it's huge for him.
Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you. Let's hear from Davis Mills after his first start at Stanford. Stanford won the game. He actually caught a touchdown pass.
He
this
sure
was
did.
What it sounded like Davis Mills on the Pac-12 Network after that game.
Here with Davis Mills, fighting to the end for your first victory under your belt. What was it like out there to get this first one?
It was great. I got to give props to my team. Offensive line blocked great all night. My receivers and running backs were making plays, and the defense played great as well.
Now, one of the highlights wasn't actually you as a quarterback. It was you as a wide receiver. You had some real wide receiver moves. Like, you went up for that ball. What was that?
It was fun. Our little version of the Stanford special. Colby gave me a chance, and I had to go up and make a play. It was fun.
Now, how do you, as a team, there's been a lot of noise on the outside. What are you and your teammates, how have you dealt with this and persevered through it?
We just got to have the mindset that nothing else matters. I'm team first always, and the first part of the season is behind us now, and we just got to keep building on this.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, so pretty successful in his start at Stanford. Pretty polished. Got it done, even caught a touchdown pass. So it got me to thinking about his first start in the NFL and what are the comparables there? You know, what would be the comparable for a guy that came from a big school, a guy that had that scouting report strong arm, pocket presence, improved decision making,
unrealized potential.
Comes from a pro style offense.
Maybe on the field a little bit sooner than possible than you wanted him to.
Wait, all those things I read, that's Zach Mettenberger's scouting report when he came out of LSU.
Oh, no.
Now let me read Davis Mills' scouting report when he came out of Stanford. Strong arms.
By the way, this is the best. I don't want to interrupt you, but this is the best comparison as far as what I think Davis Mills is that I've heard.
It made me.
It's a project that is playing way earlier than you want him to.
Ability.
Yes.
Size, stature, smarts, big program, pro style offense. And then I'll finish reading that Davis Mills scouting report coming out of Stanford. It sounds almost identical to Zach Mettenberger's. Stands tall in pocket, quality arm, good size, can work off first read. The reason I thought of that is because we just heard about how awesome the Carolina Panthers defense has been playing, and we know it as well. I was reading Brett Coleman, who works for the film room, and that's all they do is break down NFL film from every game. And he said that the Panthers defense reminded him and compared to the Texans at their best under Wade Phillips. And I was like, well, the Texans at their best under Wade Phillips faced a rookie quarterback in his first start from a big program with that scouting report, you know, thrust into the role in the middle of the season. And how did that turn out? Didn't turn out great for Zach Mettenberger. He had, an interception, three passes batted down in his face, was sacked 7 times, was hit 14 times. Now, he did throw for 299 yards, but also fumbled once. So, and he was a mid to late round pick. I believe he was a 5th or 6th round pick. And Mills is a 3rd round pick, but not a top a first round pick quarterback. The comparisons are very, very similar. So I'm not saying that's what's going to happen to Davis Mills. I'm saying that's what he's up against. A defense like Wade Phillips, you know, in that start with all those odds against him and early in his career.
You remember what J.J. Watt thought of Zach Mettenberger? He didn't took appreciate a selfie. The selfies. Yeah. Did not appreciate it. This was J.J. Watt after Zach Mettenberger made his first start. You're a jerk.
If you were watching the Texans beat up on the Titans yesterday, you may have noticed J.J. Watt add a new move to his sack repertoire. Why did the Houston defensive end mind taking a picture after taking down Tennessee quarterback Zach Mettenberger? Well, it seems the Titans rookie had been posting selfies of himself on social media all week long up until minutes before his first NFL start, and J.J. wanted to teach him a lesson.
You know, it's one of those things where their quarterback had posted a few selfies this week, including one before the game, and it's just kind of a reminder, you know, this is the National Football League, not high school. So, welcome to the show.
Hey, check it out. CBS Sports This Week, Jordan.
Let me say this real quick. I love J.J. Watt more than anything. He is a loophole.
Mm-hmm.
That is very rich of J.J. to call someone out for posting selfies. That is very, especially that year. That was 2014. That J.J. Watt calling someone out for posting selfies is as rich as it gets. That's like John Lopez calling out someone for doing coke in the bathroom.
Wait, what? Good gravy. So rumors get started.
You said you were powdering your nose earlier today.
Yes, because I was powdering my nose. I said it at the time when J.J. did that. That was him just looking for a chip to put on his shoulder, and he couldn't find anything else, so he pounced on Mettenberger taking the selfie. He had, you know, he always has to have a reason.
But come on.
Yeah, it was a bit much.
JJ's all about the selfies. This was what played on our air as John Lopez was, quote, powdering his nose.
This is Andrew Bogish with an Odyssey Sports Minute. If you haven't heard by now, Texans head coach David Culley made one of the most illogical decisions in recent memory during Sunday's loss to the Browns. On a 3rd and 15, the Texans completed a pass for 13 yards as Cleveland was called for offsides. So Houston could accept the play and have 4th and 2 or accept the penalty and have 3rd and 10. Culley took the 4th down option, but instead of going for it, he punted. After the game, Culley said the decision was about field position. On Monday, he said he messed up and made the wrong choice. Many appreciated the honesty, but then Culley admitted he punted out of frustration with his offense. It's going to be a long season in Houston. Culley better prepare himself. I'm Andrew Bogish.
that's a bit much. But if we see more of it, because it was, I think he just got caught up in the moment. It's a rookie mistake. It's like there's rookies on the field, there's rookies on the sideline, and he's a rookie head coach. I think he got swept up in the moment.
So you're powdering your nose, though.
Yeah, when that played originally, yeah, I was powdering my nose.
What's that remind you of, Figgy?
Just powdering my nose, going to the bathroom. Simple as that.
You okay?
I'm fine.
All right. I'm making sure you're good.
I'm fine.
Why do you keep, like, licking your gums?
Huh?
Let's go back to San Antonio.
I tried cocaine once.
God.
Whoa.
It was in the back of a restaurant that a buddy of mine owned, and we'd been drinking. Shout out to Blanco Cafe. Blanco Cafe in San Antonio. The San Miguel's and I went to the back after a long night, and he had some cocaine.
Wait, is that the one that you sent me to?
Yeah.
What?
Who was on crack?
The San Miguel's. What are they? They sound like a pretty tough group.
Those were good. There was twins. It was a couple of twin brothers, friends of mine. Known them since I was like probably 7 years old. And their family started Blanco Cafe in San Antonio.
The place is off the hook, by the way.
It's really good. Really, really good. And so we would go there after we partied because his dad owned it. And we would eat the carne guisada or whatever is in the back.
What about Chili Relleno?
No, it was stuff like usually that type of stuff that we could warm up. And so, yeah, it's a great place.
Sick. Shout out to
Sam cocaine once
for hopping on with a shout out to Nick Wilson out there in Carolina. Tomorrow's game day, baby. Short week, game day tomorrow. Oh, I cannot wait. Will the Astros take advantage of their opportunity? Will Davis Mills get the job done? 2 days left in the work week, and my God, it is going to be a stacked one. For the OG John Lopez, for Figgy Fig being the best in the world at what he do, I'm Landry Locker. This has been another edition of In the Loop. We'll talk to you mañana, game day, 10 a.m. But in the meantime, Clint Sterner and Ron Hughley, they are next. All I want to
do is keep on loving you. Thank you, Figgy.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.